Good day, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's second quarter 2014 earnings results conference call. With us this morning, we have Alpek Jose Valdez, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I'll now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, and welcome to our second quarter 2014 earnings conference call. We very much appreciate everyone's participation. As always, this call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdez, our CEO, will provide some insights about the industry and two recent acquisitions. Then Mr. Escalante, our CFO, will discuss our 2Q14 results, some of the major investment projects underway, and the outlook for the remainder of the year. After that, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Jose Valdez.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. It was encouraging to see some improvement in market conditions reflected in our second quarter results. Stable polyester feedstock prices, combined with the beginning of the seasonally favorable summer months, supported quarter-on-quarter growth in volume, revenues, and EBITDA. On the macro front, we observed some favorable trends that I would like to highlight. First, paraxylene prices were stable following two consecutive quarters of steep declines. After reaching a multi-year low in March, PX prices were relatively flat thereafter and started to recover in June as market conditions normalized and oil prices increased. This is relevant because there were no distortions in margins and demand created by a large swing in feedstock prices. Second, average reference PTA and PTA margins in Asia were slightly higher during the second quarter when compared to the first quarter. This trend has been slower than anticipated, but recent industry news is indicative of greater discipline going forward by some of the larger PTA producers in China. If this turns out to be the case, in the coming months, we will expect pressure in global polyester markets to ease gradually. As referenced, Asian margins potentially benefit and maintain more sustainable levels. Finally, we were pleased to see the seasonal uptick in demand that typically takes place during the second quarter, driven by incremental beverage demand in our core North American market during the summer months. In contrast, we saw increased volatility in benzene prices, which affected our caprolactam business. Benzene is an important feedstock for caprolactam and has recently come under price pressure due to market speculation and higher oil prices. Also, in our plastic and chemical segment, as expected, polypropylene and EPS margins continued to decrease during the second quarter after reaching peak levels in the second half of 2013. In summary, market conditions exhibited encouraging signs of improvement lately and some less favorable trends that we will continue monitoring closely. Besides the sequential improvement I just discussed, the second quarter was particularly important for our company because we engaged in two acquisitions that will enhance our existing businesses. A few days ago, we announced the larger one, which involves a series of agreements signed with BASF, our JV partner in Polioles, Mexico, regarding our EPS and polyurethane business activities in the Americas. This was a transformational event for our plastic and chemical segment, especially our EPS business. Under the agreement, Alpek will acquire Polioles and BASF's EPS business activities in North and South America, including EPS production sites in Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, and Chile. In parallel, BAS will acquire Polioles' polyurethane business activities in Mexico. Upon completion of the transaction, we will operate the largest EPS production capacity in the Americas, and we will be the only player with operations from Canada down to Tierra del Fuego. We are very excited about this transaction, as APEC will gain full control over its EPS strategy and will be able to unlock value by replicating Polioli's successful EPS business model throughout the region. We see significant potential for domestic and international EPS growth by leveraging our proven track record in this business. The second acquisition I would like to discuss is part of our polyester segment. The target was Cabelma PET, a food-grade PET recycling operation located in Argentina that will complement our virgin PET plant in Zárate. While not a significant financial contributor to our overall business, this is a strategic acquisition that will enhance our capability to offer a PET resin that combines virgin and recycled material in a single pellet. We plan to incorporate Cabelma's PET food-grade recycled resin into Zárate's manufacturing process. Our customers will benefit as they will be able to streamline their operations by eliminating unnecessary feed and blending processes used to combine virgin and recycled PET. It is important to note that both acquisitions were included in our $300 million CapEx guidance for 2014. Regarding our other strategic projects, I'm pleased to inform you that all of them continue to move forward, reflecting our full commitment to their implementation. As we look back to the first half of the year, our EBITDA has been lower than what we had anticipated. Our original estimations did not include the $20 million impact from inventory devaluation in the first quarter, nor the increased benzene price pressure affecting our caprolactam business. Furthermore, savings from our cogeneration project have been delayed due to a longer than expected interconnection process with the public utility. On the positive side, we are encouraged by the signs of sequential improvement in market conditions observed after the first quarter and would expect this trend to continue, but the scenario that we see for the remaining of the year is not one where we would be able to offset the lower accumulated EBITDA. Eduardo will discuss guidance along with this quarter's financial results and detail progress in the strategic projects next.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. I would like to begin by providing some complementary information on this quarter's results and then move on to our progress in strategic projects and EBITDA guidance. Starting with polyester, volume was up 8% compared with the first quarter, and 3% versus the same period in 2013, due to a combination of factors including seasonality and stable feedstock prices. It is worth noting that higher volume came about despite having one less production facility. Remember, we closed our Cape Fear site last year. Yet, regarding revenues, the higher volume was offset by lower prices, both year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter, driven by lower paraxylene prices. Polyester EBITDA totaled $91 million this quarter. Even adjusting for the first quarter $22 million inventory devaluation charge, polyester EBITDA grew 6% on a sequential basis, supported by incremental volume and stable feedstock prices. Second quarter plastics and chemical segment results reflect a significant impact from caprolactam, which was affected by a month-long plant shutdown and recent benzene price pressure. Excluding caprolactam, segment volume was up both on an annual and a quarterly basis. Moreover, caprolactam accounted for more than half of the $8 million plastics and chemicals EBITDA decline between the first and the second quarter. Moving down the P&L, we reported majority net income of $40 million, during the second quarter, up 67% from the first quarter, primarily due to sequential improvement in operating income and comprehensive financing expenses. The $71 million majority net loss we reported in second quarter 2013 was due to the $140 million net impact associated with the closure of Cape Fear. Moving on to CapEx and net debt, CapEx for the quarter was $66 million, up 49% from the previous quarter as the year's strategic investments were undertaken. Funds were used primarily in the Corpus Christi PTA and PET site, the Cabelma PET acquisition, the Cosoleacaque cogeneration plant, and the caprolactam technology upgrade project. A strong free cash flow performance is reflected in net debt, which is down 7% or $55 million compared to year-end 2013, even taking into account this year's $110 million CapEx. Before discussing guidance, I would like to provide a brief update on some of our key investment projects. Our 95-megawatt Cosoleacaque cogeneration plant is ready for a startup. Preliminary tests have been successful, and we are finalizing the interconnection process with CFE. Besides providing the means for us to reach our end customers, interconnection to the CFE grid is key at this stage to be able to run full-scale tests of this facility. These tests may take more than a month to implement, and we must wait until the beginning of the following month before we can deliver power to our customers. Our team is pursuing the necessary steps in order to conclude interconnection by the end of July. Concluding the time required for the tests and the beginning of the month restriction, we would most likely begin power delivery by October 1st. In June, we undertook a month-long planned shutdown at our caprolactam plant as part of the technology upgrade project. That stage concluded in July, and the site's ramp-up is expected through August. The plant should be fully operational shortly after that, with an estimated $8 million in annual cost savings from improved efficiencies. The process to begin the construction of our Altamira cogeneration plant is accelerating. We are initiating the EPC contractor selection process. Capacity and investment figures are being finalized, and we expect to take the project to our board for final approval in the fourth quarter. Regarding our MEG integration project, discussions with Pemex continue to move forward. Recent progress includes the development of technical proposals and technology selection for the ethane cracker and the MEG plant. Lastly, the detailed feasibility study for our JV in Russia is advancing as planned. We expect to obtain the final investment figures for board approval by year end. The rest of our strategic projects remain on track. I would like now to wrap up this section of the call with an update on EBITDA guidance. As Pepe mentioned earlier, looking back at the first half of the year, we encountered some unforeseen conditions that impacted our results. Year-to-date consolidated EBITDA is $231 million, approximately $45 million below our original expectations. The EBITDA shortfall in the first half of the year is primarily due to the $22 million inventory devaluation charge in the first quarter, the interconnection delay in our cogeneration plant, and the recent impact from benzene prices on our caprolactam business. Looking ahead, our view is that conditions may continue to improve gradually for the remainder of the year, but we still expect our EBITDA to be affected by delayed cogeneration startup and sustained pressure from benzene prices. In light of this, we believe is prudent to revise our EBITDA guidance down from $570 million to around $500 million. Although 2014 has been more challenging than we initially anticipated, we remain fully committed to making disciplined investments in our company that will position Alpek for long-term success. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions.
Thank
Operator,
you.
Please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, simply press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Also, if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, star 1 if you would like to ask a question or make a comment. We'll pause for a moment. Andres Callar, Bradesco Asset Management.
Yes, guys, good morning. Could you give us a little bit more color in terms of, you mentioned that you're beginning to see some greater discipline in the polyester chain in China. What are you seeing specifically? How are you seeing the market in the second half, et cetera?
Okay, let me mention that perhaps starting in April this year, in China, the margins of PET have been very low over the last months. I would say more than anything due to very low PTA margins. The PET margins have remained more or less similar to what they were in the past. Let me just give you an example. PTA margins, which in 2010, PTA margins to paraxylene, which in 2010 were averaging $225 per ton. During this first quarter of this year, were a little bit over $50, so a reduction from $225 to $50. The conversion cost we estimate to be $100-$110 in that range for the efficient plants, and the variable cost we believe to be around $70. So what we're seeing is a situation where the margin is below not only the conversion cost of PTA, but below the variable cost. So as you can imagine, in this environment, most of the PTA, if not all of the PTA producers in Asia, and in China in particular, are losing a significant amount of money. So there's a group of three large producers of PTA in China. The three of them, newcomers in the industry, which together account for more than 20 million tons per year of capacity, which happens to be more than 50% of the total capacity in China. These companies, which have been experiencing very significant financial losses, they made an announcement at the beginning of the second quarter that they were going to change the way they price their PTA. In some cases, they even mentioned that they were not going to continue meeting or complying with their contracts for the remaining of the year of 2014, and that they were going to both increase the spreads between PTA and paraxylene, and also that they were going to link PTA prices to paraxylene prices as well. And we have seen this effort, and for a while, these guys were successful. They increased margins of PTA over $100 per ton, as I mentioned, starting the year in 50. So they were successful for a while. But in the last month or so, and this is the reason why we are becoming so cautious, in the last month or so, unfortunately, PX prices started to come up again, and the margins of or the improvement in margins of PTA has gone back a little bit. So the only thing we know, and again, this is pretty much public information, is that the PTA producers in China are really desperate and trying to do whatever it takes to improve the margins. some of these companies that I talk about even mentioned that they were going to reduce their capacity utilization to 70% or even below that if it was necessary to increase the margin. So that is a little bit of the, let's say, good news. However, we saw some improvement for a couple of months, and then right now, in particular in July, as of yesterday, due to the volatility in PX price, the margins are coming up and down, so we cannot see a very clear trend in these last 2 weeks. But there is no question, and I think we have talked about this before, that there is a lot of, I mean, these guys are under a lot of pressure to do something because they cannot keep going with these losses forever. So this is part of the changing, I would say, situation in Asia. For us, if PTA margins increase, let's say $50, I mean, as long as they come over $100, $110, $120, which we believe is the minimum that we, you know, there should be, well, this would give us certainly, this would put less pressure on imports of PET into the North American market, and at the same time, this would also help our exports of PTA, both directly and indirectly.
And next we'll hear from Vanessa Quiroga of Credit Suisse.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, Vanessa, very well.
Okay, great. Hi, Jose Eduardo Hernan. My question is regarding strategic projects. If you can update us about the potential a vertical integration project with MEG that you have been working out with Pemex, and what are the possibilities of other projects being started to be discussed, like integration in paraxylene, and or whether that project has changed its characteristics given the global dynamics that we are seeing in PX prices. Thank you.
Yes, Vanessa. In terms of the MEG project, I think Eduardo mentioned we have made significant progress. The most important, I mean, we have in terms of technology selection, we're now looking at land, the location of the train to determine the best location for the plant. The most important milestone, I would say, that has been done is that, I don't know if you remember that we were expecting by May or June a determination from Pemex whether there was going to be ethane for the project or not. I think that Pemex came up with a response, and they have confirmed to us that there will be 22,000 barrels per day of ethane, which is not enough for 100% of operation of the project, but we are right now analyzing with them the possibility of complementing this ethane with additional ethylene that they will be supplying so that we could run the plant at full capacity. So there is that piece of good news that the raw material is there. So we're right now, looking at that. And we are discussing with them a potential change in the scope of the project, whereby they would allow us to, as opposed to buying ethane from them, co-investing with them also in the fractionation plant so that we could start the process from natural gas as opposed to ethane. We're analyzing very carefully that opportunity, but that could be a very interesting, a very attractive situation since we look at the natural gas prices going forward as more predictable and perhaps more stable than the ethane prices. The ethane prices, could change, not over the next 4 or 5 years, but could change in the longer term and could get closer to NAFTA as the supply-demand improves for ethane. But in natural gas, we believe that the prices are going to be relatively range-bound for the remaining of the, for the foreseeable future. And so that could be a very attractive opportunity. We're right now analyzing that possibility. Our estimation with this MEG project is that we will reach, a conclusion with Pemex perhaps by September. And after that, the next step would be to invest, to get authorization from our board, to invest a certain amount of money to be able to define the investment with a higher degree of certainty or precision, which, as you know, these days is very important before embarking in a project to have a very updated estimate of the investment. So as I say, I think we are doing very well on this MEG project, and we believe, as Eduardo said, that we will have much better definition by the end of the year. Let me talk a little bit about the Altamira project, because you didn't ask, but I still think it's important for all of you to be aware of that. In Altamira project, we're expecting the results of our EPC program next month in August, sometime in August. What we are expecting is to confirm the capacity and the investment in the plant. So far, we have a preliminary estimate, which is in line with what we have been considering. So that project is also looking good. If we get the estimate of investment in August-September timeframe, it's very likely that by October, we'll go to the board for final authorization of that particular cogeneration project. With regards to the paraxylene project, we have put that project for the time being in the back burner for a series of reasons. Most important is the reduction in the margin of PX over NAFTA that we have seen over the last months, and which is to a certain extent not a surprise for us. Okay, so for that reason, just to give you an idea, the spread of PX to NAFTA, which was around $600 per ton for the last 2-3 years, reached in the March timeframe, reached a level below $300. With $300, that project does not make any economic sense. And for that reason, again, we are not moving ahead with that project for the time being. We are looking at other integration projects with a lot of interest, particularly which, again, we discussed with you in some detail. In the case particularly of propylene, we continue to look for potential opportunities for producing or for integrated, backward integrated to propylene, either with PDH facility or alternative, we're starting to look also at a potential MTP plant, which, again, as in the case of the glycol project, the MTP plant has the additional advantage that, as opposed to starting with propane to produce propylene, we will start with natural gas. And that, again, it's from our perspective a very important situation. And finally, Eduardo said, talk about Russia. In Russia, we expect to have at least a preliminary estimate of the investment in September-October timeframe, and we believe, again, at that time we will be able to be a little bit more specific about the decision on that project. And we are also considering some other, backward integration projects, even in Russia. We're looking at the possibility also of participating in a glycol plant in Russia as well. That would fully integrate the PET plant in that part of the world. And I would say those are the most important projects that we have undergoing at this moment.
Thank you, Pepe. That was very interesting and useful. Going back to your comments about the Asian players in PTA, what do you think needs to happen for them to actually do this, implement this strategy of reducing capacity utilization to 70% to help margins. What would be the trigger for them to do that? How much more lower do they have a floor in terms of margin or what? How possible? How likely is that to happen?
I would say I don't see the margins going back below $50 as we saw at the beginning of the year and the end of last year. If you look at the October, January time frame, margins were below $50 or very close to $50. And we don't see the margins going below that again because, as I mentioned, this is below variable cost for some of them. So it makes no sense. Why do you want to produce more if you lose money or you lose additional money with every ton you produce? So it doesn't make sense. So I don't see margins going back to those levels. But I think as time goes by, these losses are accumulating. The incentive, again, for them to increase the margins, even at the cost of losing volume, is very clear. To a certain extent, what I understand happened this year is that some of these producers have already contracts for PTA that should remain in place until the end of 2014. So they tried to renege on those contracts, and the customer's reaction was very forceful, and perhaps that is also part of the explanation why you see that these margins went up and then came back again a little bit, on top of the fact that the paraxylene increased. But I will be relatively certain that for next year, these contracts are not going to be renewed under the same terms that they were this year, in 2014.
And Pepe, and what percentage of the sales of PTA in Asia do you think are done through contracts?
I'm talking particularly of the Chinese market now, but I'm talking about these are the people that I think a significant portion of their sales are contracted. It depends on each one, but it's a significant portion of their sales on the contract. I think this change, once these contracts expire, I think they will have a better opportunity to improve their margins.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next, we'll hear from Nicolaj Lippmann of Morgan Stanley.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for the call and for taking my questions. First, a question on the guidance and what you're seeing in terms of the polyester margins just in North America. So you're reducing the guidance by 70. We have the 22 plus. You say you're losing or you're not saving roughly $4 million a month from cogeneration. So that gives me around 40. The remaining roughly 30, would that be related to plastics? Some of that was caprolactam. Can you help us just to understand how much of that has to do with North American margins in the polyester? Also, if you can give any kind of color on the PET to PTA margin, in specifically in North America. So that's the first question. And then and the second question, down on the cogeneration plant in Casablanca. I'm a little intrigued. You've been constructing it for 2 years. CFE knew this. Now you have a few months of delay in terms of just connecting. The plant is ready, as I understand. What's really causing this? If you could get any kind of, and what makes you think that by August things should be better? So those are my questions. Thanks.
Regarding thank you Nikolai for your questions. Regarding the guidance, what we see for the year, as we mentioned, is a reduction of about $70 million in our EBITDA, basically coming around 25 to 30 million from the delay of the cogeneration plant in Cosoleacaque. And the rest coming $22 million from the inventory devaluation charge that we had in the first quarter of this year. We don't see paraxylene prices coming back to historical levels anytime soon, so we don't think that charge will be reverted in our results. The impact that we expect on caprolactam from caprolactam in our consolidated EBITDA is between $5 and $10 million. So all in all, we expect to be $70 million below our expectations, pretty much because of these three main reasons. In the case of the polyester margins, even though as we have discussed, they have been tight. That was already considered in our guidance, so that was included in our expectation for the year. Regarding the polyester margins, PET to PTA margins on North America, I will turn it to Pepe.
As a result of these low margins in Asia, we have seen a pressure in PET margins in North America as a result of imports. Particularly Chinese imports, imports from Oman, and a little bit imports from India. Those would be the three main countries that are importing PET into the U.S. The imports have been increasing to a certain extent there. So we've seen imports, and certainly the pressure of those low prices in Asia to a certain extent start at these very low levels to constrain the ability of PET margins to go up. And it is a factor, we believe, or it might be a factor for the remaining of the year that will, let's say, make it difficult for us to improve margins there. Hopefully, as I say, the margins will improve gradually, and then some of these imports will be pushed back, and margins will could improve a little bit more in North America, or it might be a combination of higher volume, higher margins, so some combination thereof. But yes, at this stage, the PET margins have been under a lot of pressure in North America. And as I mentioned before, remember we export out of Mexico more than 500,000 tons of PTA per year, and those 500,000 tons of PTA per year are also subject to competition with Asian prices.
Got it. And in terms of
the PTA margins is okay. In terms of the Cosulecaque project, I think the construction was delayed 1 or 2 months, which again is not ideal, but it's to a certain extent normal at these times. And part of this delay always has to do with a delay in equipment, in delivery of equipment. So the project was pretty much on time, and even better, I would say, the project was also in line, the cost of the project was in line with the budget, which nowadays is sometimes difficult. So we were in cost and a little bit delay time, 1 to 2 months. The problem since then has been mostly the fact that once you have the plant ready, then you have to start all these contract with CFE, and then they go and visit your installation and everything, and they start to make some tests. And in this particular case, in our substation, the substation that will connect the energy coming out of the plant into CFE, they asked us to change certain type of equipment at a late stage of the project. And that has been probably the main cause of the delay, because then we have to order new equipment, and by the time it takes to have them ready, that created a delay. Right now, the plant is ready, and all of the equipment has been approved by CFE. We expect to start tests, as Eduardo said, probably next week. It might be end of this week or early next week. Once you do that, these guys are asking us for 45 days of this process of testing. As Eduardo said, we are trying and we're doing everything we can, to try to start the plant on September 1st. But let's assume we start next week. We have to be starting almost today or tomorrow to be ready to start in September 1st. With this project, you have to start at the beginning of the month. So we can start on September 1st or we can start on October 1st. So we're doing everything we can to be able to start on September 1st. But there is, without question, some uncertainty around that because you require, as I mentioned, these 44, 45 days for the test. Perhaps if the test goes smoothly, 100% perfect, we could do it in September. But for the assumption for the guidance assumption, we assume that we will start in October. This is the process. CFE has actually been very helpful. It's just a very cumbersome process that we were not fully aware of.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Next, we'll hear from Gustavo Gatas of BTG.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I had a couple of questions here. If I could just touch base, I was looking back at my notes, and initially there was a plan for a debottlenecking of the Pearl River plant in the first half. And I saw your comments. I think it was Eduardo who commented that volumes were up. I was just wondering, has that DBN already, let's say, played out? And if I could stay on the CapEx front, I just wanted to confirm what you guys said. So the two acquisitions will happen, and they will still, let's say, keep the CapEx budget below the $300 million that was initially in place. So just double-check that. And the second question that I had just had to do with the deal with BASF, and I was just wondering whether or not you could give us some additional visibility on how much was EBITDA contribution from both the units that, say, you're keeping inside, from Polioles and the assets that will be sold to BASF itself, just so that we can have a taste for size there, if possible.
Okay. Relative to the Pearl River plant, we have postponed the bottlenecking of the plant because we have been able to operate all the other plants very well this year. We've been very successful with the operation of the other plants. So we do not need the capacity as of now, the additional capacity. We will probably do that before the start-up of the Corpus project, when we're going to have some PTA coming from Corpus into that plant. So for the time being, we have not been operating our PET plants, let's put it this way, at the 100%. We've been operating more in at the lower capacity. So we don't need that, the bottlenecking now. The investment is very marginal, and the time, we don't need a lot of time to do that. So we can do that, let's say, with six months in advance, and we can do that any time. We just did not consider we had to invest the CapEx at this moment. That's with respect to the PET. And then let me jump to – what was your last question again? Let me jump to
– Yeah, my last question was about just how much the EPS business was contributing.
Yeah, let me jump to that, and then I will let Eduardo answer the CapEx question, if you don't mind.
Perfect. No, it's perfect.
Look, in terms of just to give you an idea of the size, I will tell you the following. I mean, we are very careful not to disclose individual numbers, and it's not so much an issue with us, but with our partner as well. But I will tell you, if you look at this as the impact on the majority shareholder, or the impact in Alpek, if you wish, as a majority shareholder, majority EBITDA, et cetera, and investment, this project is equivalent for us, as if we were investing, $40 million. And eventually, if we capture synergies and do all the things that we have planned, and we're successful in doing that, they would probably represent for us like a $20 million EBITDA improvement. So just to give you a flavor of the size. and I don't know if this is enough for you, but you're talking of a project that will increase majority EBITDA once the synergies are captured of $20 million.
If we were to think about this then as a complete result of the entire acquisition, the best picture would be, let's say I'm going to spend about $40 million to get a $20 million increase on what I already have today. Is that a fair way of thinking about it?
That is a fair way, except the only qualification, it is assuming no further strategic activities on that business. I mean, there could be some other possibilities of consolidation in the industry that we could be able to participate in. Okay? So this
right.
is without any further project. Okay?
Perfect.
Yeah, and regarding the CapEx for both acquisitions, Gustavo, they are included in the $300 million CapEx guidance that we provided. I think something that is important to mention is that the closing of this deal is expected before the year-end 2014. We have an agreement with BASF, and we will be implementing the closing in the following months. And the other relevant information is that we did both acquisitions with cash on hand. From Albert.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Also, important also, Gustavo, with respect to the CAPEX, this project with BSF we have been working on for 2 years. So that's why you can understand it was in the CAPEX, in the budget. It's not a surprise. It's not a last-minute decision. We have been working on this for quite some time. And that's why it was already considered. And the same could be said about the other projects. The recycling PET project. We have been discussing this project for more than a year.
Okay. Guys, thank you very much.
Next, we'll hear from Olivia Petronillo of J.P. Morgan.
Hi. Hi. Hello. Hi, it's really pleasant to hear. Just two questions. The first one, we've seen some shutdown capacity in Asia, basically for both polyester and PTA, and to see if it is in your guidance review, is already considered this decrease of the guidance for the year. And actually, the second question is also related to the lower guidance. If you think that your CAPEX of the $300 million would be going down because of the lower EBITDA generation for this year. Thank you.
So, Felipe, hello, this is Hernan. You're breaking up a bit, but recapping your questions. The second one was whether we would reduce our CAPEX guidance for this year or the next based on the lower EBITDA. And the question related to Asian margins, I believe, or Asian capacity, could you repeat that for us, please?
Yes, because we have seen, the first question is actually a follow-up, because we've seen some shutdown capacity since the beginning of the year, like you guys anticipated in the beginning of the year, that the margins were too low, that some companies in Asia would have to shut down capacity. And we've seen this happening. Do you still see more capacity shutting down to keep the prices, or do you think that pretty much is done right?
Certainly, for margins to improve, more capacity has to be shut down. But remember something that is very important. A lot of the PTA players have multiple lines. So it's not like they're going to have to shut down a plant. Let's say some of these large players that I just talked about, they have three or four or five lines. So they don't have to shut down a plant. They can just stop one or two lines from producing to achieve this capacity or this production. If they don't take that step of reducing production or capacity, well, the margins will not improve. That's for a fact. So I do believe reducing the capacity is very, very doable for these guys. It's relatively simple. If you have three lines, you operate with two lines. That would be probably the most typical case, companies with three lines. So you shut down one line, and by doing that, you are already reducing your capacity to 66%.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we believe is going to, what we believe is going to be happening for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Hi, Felipe. This is Eduardo. Regarding your question about the guidance on CapEx, we are not changing our $300 million guidance at this time. And really, in our forecast, we think we will be able to reach the $300 million, but it really will depend on the evolution of the Corpus Christi site. The investment we have been doing at the Corpus Christi PTA PET plant is tied to milestones that are being met during construction. So when those milestones are achieved is when we deliver the investment. So I would say that is the most relevant factor. To date, our CapEx have been $110 million for the first half of the year, but it is relevant to notice that this does not include the EPS project, since that is going to be closed during the remaining the remainder of the year.
Okay. Now, okay, because.
Thank you.
And next we'll hear from Juan Lopez of BTG.
Hi, thank you for the conference call. I want to know if you can disclose the EBITDA generation coming only from new projects you expect for 2015, and maybe give us some light on CapEx we should expect for that year.
Well, Juan, hello, this is Hernan. We typically provide guidance for 2015 in February, so I would ask that we wait until then, particularly since we are revising our 2014 guidance at the moment, and give us a chance to fine-tune the figures for 2015. But at this moment, all of the projects that were planned to be executed in the coming years are unchanged.
We might add new projects in the process.
Yes.
We might add from now till the end of the year, we might have new projects. So that's why I believe it's wise to wait for a little bit more time. I mean, to give us a little bit more time to be a little bit more precise.
Okay, but, I understand.
But, I mean, what I can give you, if you want a sense of direction, for sure, CapEx, the next year are going to be higher than this year. I mean, because the Altamira expansion project will probably kick in. The MEG project will also do that. So, and the Corpus Christi will enter its more, a new phase. So, without question, CapEx are going to be higher next year than in 2014. And for the most part, also, I have to say, the EBITDA from all of these projects, unfortunately, will not be seen. We will not capture any additional EBITDA of these large projects in 2015. We will hopefully start capturing those in 16, 17.
Something that we have disclosed is for some of the projects that we are implementing now, like the Cosoleacaque cogeneration and the DSM technology upgrade in our caprolactam plant, We have disclosed the savings that we expect for next year. In the case of the COSO cogeneration, we think it's going to be around $45 million during the year. and for the technology upgrade, it's going to be around $8 million for next year.
Okay, and the BASS is kicking, but...
Was there anything further, Juan?
I was going to ask about the shutdown you did in this quarter. Should we expect further shutdowns in this year?
No. The shutdown was on the caprolactam plant, and it was just for the implementation of the technology upgrade. The plant has started up, and we don't expect any more shutdowns for the rest of the year.
Did it start from July 1?
It started the second week of July.
Okay, thanks.
Next, we'll hear from Soledad Coroni of Larain Vial.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the call. Given this CAPEX that you are planning to have in 2015, I would like to know your net leverage target for the future.
Well, as we have mentioned several times, our idea is not to exceed the 2.5. Perhaps at certain point in time it might be 3 net debt to EBITDA. We do not want to go beyond that, given sometimes changes in the industry. So our idea would be to stay below those levels. And we believe with the cash flow generation that we have, it's very likely we will be there.
Okay, thanks.
And next we'll hear from Andres Quellar of Bradesco Asset Management.
Hi, it's already been answered. Thanks.
Thank you.
Daniel Rojas, Merrill Lynch.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for the call. My question is regarding the single-step technology. It is my understanding that your arrangement with BASF included the use of this technology. Did you acquire it with the transaction, or you will continue to pay a licensing agreement? And what are your plans for the EPS business in the Americas? Thank you.
We will continue to pay, I know you could call license, but a technology fee to them. Relatively, for the time being, we agreed we will pay a relatively, low technology fee for the, continued support. But this agreement does not include any major technology development. It's mostly... sort of a short-term agreement. We, in terms of plants, we are planning to build a pilot plant ourselves. With this capacity that, as I mentioned, is going to be 230,000 tons, with this capacity, we have enough critical mass to justify, having our own pilot plant.
And what is your market share in the Americas for EPS?
Capacity share would be 40. Market share is very close to that, 37, something like that.
And our market share with this deal is going to be 37, and that is going to be about three times the second largest player in the industry. As we have mentioned before, we do see a significant opportunity in developing the EPS market, in particular in South America. The market has grown in Mexico significantly, both for packaging and also for as an insulator for housings, for houses. So we expect a significant growth in the EPS markets in South America in the future.
So it is fair to assume that you are going to continue your playbook, the same strategy you follow with PET, where you will try to consolidate the EP business in North America, right?
We will actively look at those opportunities. I put it that way. When people ask us about acquisitions, it's always very difficult because, like, same thing happens to us in PTA, PET. They ask me all the time, why don't you do more acquisitions? The problem is that with the new technologies or with the technology that we already have, it makes it very difficult to justify acquiring someone.
Let me put it another way.
The cost of the plant that you acquire is so much higher than our cost that in any case, you would be like buying the market more than buying the facility. I don't know if you follow me, but...
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. It's not going to be easy, but we will look actively at opportunities, certainly.
So you would see opportunity if you see other small players who don't use that single-step technology, and which I assume you could use if you were into an acquisition mode and continue to consolidate the EPS business.
Yeah, that's right. Although it's not easy to change from old plant or a different technology to a single step. Some technologies are suitable for this, let's say, retrofit. Some other technologies are not. So those are the complications, and that's why, again, we have to be careful in not to create some expectation that a lot of acquisitions will be done. But we'll certainly look at possibilities.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And it appears there are no further questions. Mr. Lozano, I'll turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing comments.
Yes, I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. And please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Thank you very much and have a nice day.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for your participation.